Excited and honored to be here talking tonight. Something I've never endeavored before. And I found myself, I'm sure as some of you that have given this a go may have found a little concerned about what it would be like to be monologue. And Sarah sort of allayed my fears by saying, oh, we'll turn it into a conversation if you need that. And that's usually what happens anyway. So I kind of wrote something and I think I may turn to it. It's not very long, but I just wanted to tell you a little bit about where I am. Can you hear me all right? I am on pilgrimage. I've left my home in Santa Fe, and I'm on the East Coast with my family. I've been here for a month. My sister's had a pretty serious medical crisis. And she's doing really well. She's recovering really well. And we've kind of gone from being scared, just scared out of our minds that we were going to lose her, to just giddy with joy that it looked like she was going to pull through. And then seeing if she's going to pull through, there's going to be a long road back, and I wanted to be here to support them through this time, support us all. They're supporting me too. So yeah, kind of leaving everything I know and my Dharma support that I'm accustomed to, partly because it's been so demanding time-wise. I haven't had a lot of time to myself. And so I'm here. I'm kind of past, a little bit past that now. We finally got my sis off all her meds, and she's not so damn sick anymore. And now it's really the part about quarantine and how vulnerable she is to people coming in or stuff coming in from the little ones in the family. So that's been an interesting challenge over this last holiday. But what Sarah kind of encouraged me to talk about was what it's like to leave practice behind in that way and bring it with me when I'm not having a lot of time to sit. And yeah, what it's like to really just, you know, in my ordinary life, I am pretty much always carrying a koan around, and you know, I have been working with a teacher, I've been working with Tenny, and really attending a lot of Zoom with all of you, and I just haven't had the time to break away, I haven't been able to carve out the time to do it. And it's been interesting. I'm in a really beautiful place. And what I started doing is trying to write some things about practice and what my relationship to koans is. And what I found was every time I tried and started to start something, the next day would be so different that I couldn't really imagine relaying that. And what I noticed while I was doing that was I'm right on a saltwater river, and watching the ducks out in the bay, watching them sort of circling and congregating in their one area that they seem to come back to again and again, and get blown into shore, and then flying back to that same place and congregating again and getting blown back to shore again, and never seeming to tire, to just keep on doing their lives. That's kind of what's been helping me hold things together. It's not exactly a koan, but it's not very different from one. What I guess I probably am gonna read the little piece I wrote, because I guess there's maybe three things that I'm not sure what the third one will be, but we'll see what comes out. What I've particularly noticed in practice with koans has been an empathic relationship. That every time I'm working with a koan, that it is able to find a place in me that it touches and allows me to, I don't know, be here, be where I am. And that's what they do again and again. And I've come to really, really trust that. The second thing is really about not knowing. That I've really started thinking that it really works not to always figure things out. And as far as giving a talk, I always enjoy the talks that aren't written out so much more. But I also have noticed that I don't always know, when people deliver them, how much they're just bringing in what the meditation is, and bringing the thing they've prepared through and into it in that way that meets it there. That's not very articulate, but I think I'm going to find out if there's a third thing when I read my little piece, because that's how far I can get right now. And I hope that we can do this kind of just as a meditation. So one of the first koans that really came to get me was so spoken sort of off the cuff. In a long stream of koans, Joan Sutherland effused one night up in the little tiny temple in Cerro Gordo in Santa Fe. As she often did at the time, overwhelming with a blizzard of images and unlikely juxtapositions, fired quickly, elaborately, and filled with abundant beauty. And it seemed infuriatingly deliberate. She streamed out much, much more than I could possibly take in, which drove me crazy because I wanted to catch every one. I had noticed how every one had the potential to reach me inside and touch something that I'd wanted my whole life to be more conversant with. The one that caught me wasn't the thing she was talking about. can't remember her subject that night, but the one that got me was sort of an aside, like something you see in your peripheral vision. But it swept me up and inhabited my curiosity. How many steps to the meditation hall? That's it. How many steps to the meditation hall? I had been trying to hang around the periphery of our new little Santa Fe Sangha, trying to lay low, covering up how deeply the koans were affecting me. This wasn't exactly on purpose. It was more that I was sort of dumbfounded. They were stirring something I couldn't put my finger on and had no way of articulating. And on the surface, I wasn't hiding any more than usual. Maybe sometimes even a little less. But hiding nonetheless. Retrospectively, there had long been a privacy wall, keeping at least some of inside a bit out of my reach. It makes me wonder at the abundance of what seems to stay beyond where we can find it. At roughly that same time, Joan started asking the community to consider taking refuge, writing out our own vows to correspond with established ones, to express the way this strange practice lives in us. I felt utterly unprepared and held myself at some safe distance. I wasn't ready when most of the Sangha leapt. Retrospectively, the 100-foot pole, which, if I was honest, struck the faintest note of terror in me. Take a step from the top of the 100-foot pole was one of the first koans to offer me a kind of empathy that has grown more and more into how I would describe my relationship to koans now. More times than not, maybe even always, I feel that they empathically mirror something that lives inside me, and in so doing, help me to meet it, if I allow myself to take the bait and not try to outsmart it. Step one is just the meeting. Take a step from the top of the 100-foot pole. I couldn't. And it was exactly how I felt inside. So it met me where I was. I didn't actually need more than that. But I did go on thinking I lacked something. Soon the next empathy pass came in the form of another koan. What is it you lack? What is it that practice must mend? Again, my doubt was stirred. There was self-doubt at the top, but underneath, a sort of confidence in something was tickled. I liked this. I had recently been practicing meditation with a few years of Vipassana training. I was focused a lot on how greed and aversion and self-concern were causing me a lot of suffering. I began to feel a bit concerned about how self-concerned I was. I could see how helpful learning to watch my mind was. But the Coens seem to echo some deep creative birthing I've always felt inside me. The way I am that isn't anything at all to do with suffering. Even if I find out later it was suffering that helped me locate it. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Back to that peripheral vision Coen, the one that wasn't the focus. How many steps to the meditation hall? I could see a response that seemed to correspond. The meditation hall was already inside me. I didn't need to negotiate any distance to be in the temple. I'm always there. I could feel the simple thing resounding in me. Then, early one morning, another kind of response appeared. In that time before waking out of slumber, when the dream time is its own complete world. That way the dream feels like it holds everything inside it. The way I feel before I snap into accountability and gathering my bearings. When everything feels complete unto itself. How many steps to the meditation hall? There was a bird singing in the pre-dawn darkness. It was the only thing. The bird sings before the dawn. I heard that bird singing out in the dark and it filled me up. It really wasn't a thing if I felt it coming up from inside me. Even though it seemed to be outside me too, it flip-flops even now. Inside, outside, bird, Martha, singing, dark, dawn. Slow, like time-lapse, and new. Like the first morning. Like dreams I've had of finding out I've actually died and experiencing the world as it really is. Like it is heaven. And yet it was just an ordinary morning. I got up and got out of bed. But my body was still singing with the feel of it. The dreamy pre-wake feel. The reciprocity of outer world expressing what's inside me. At the same time as my feeling inside me is an expression of the great big outer world. That's what I'm most aware of in practice now. And that first daring to come out of hiding by actually allowing myself my response to a koan still has all that feeling in it. That feeling that is so straightforward, the world just as it is, turning me inside out and outside in again. David Hinton begins the first chapter of his book, Hunger Mountain, with a chapter he calls Sincerity. This is the place I encounter when I encounter the Coens. The place where I'm contacting my own depths and the world doing this sort of flip-flopping. He calls it the deepest kind of belonging. Martha singing in the early dawn. How many steps to the meditation hall? Thank you. So I guess this is the part where you get to say if anything came up for you as I was speaking.
One thing that's